Looking for thought leaders on call, I am Paul France, owner of France Games, of an SCP Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just man, I joined to talk cast every Thursday, starting 9:30 Eastern Time. You can either join us by going to the Starfleet Universe Online Discord server. Just go to the SFU On Call stream voice channel, and you can listen there. You can find an invite to the server on the SFUOnCall.com website. It's right there on the main page. Just go there and you can find it. Also, if you want to watch the stream on Twitch.tv, yes, Twitch.tv/SFUOnCall, and you can join the chat there and watch my lovely face as I stream it live starting around 9:35. I usually try to start just a tiny bit late, but 9:35, so I give people plenty of time to get there. If you don't get there by 9:35, you are going to be missing something. And of course, you need to contact me for any reason. My email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. It's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, you will follow me on the Twitters. You can follow my podcasting account. It's sfuoncall. Or you can follow my personal account, which is Paul Franz, PaulFrnz. There's no T in that. And also, if you want to follow my business account, that's Franz Games, FranzGames. And of course, there's no T in that. Actually, I had an issue with that today, where I had to actually spell out my last name. Yes, I actually have to spell it out. If you're not from this part of Pennsylvania, you don't know this. And of course, I have a Blue Sky account. I have, of course, at sfuoncall.bsky.social. And also the franzgames.com account. Obviously, the franzgames.com account is my personal slash business account. And of course, there's a lovely talk cast, skits in the podcast, available at iTunes and various other feeds around the net. Some quick news from A to B this week. There actually has been progress on the Module K update. And also the FNE Civil Wars. There have been plenty of work done on both of those, and plenty of orders have been sent out the door this week, which is always great. This week on Found an Online Store, we have the FNE Counter Sheet number 36. It's only for $1. $1. Only $1. A special sheet of 36 single-sided markers, including colonies, PF coins, coins for the Federation F 101 and A20, and the defensive regiments with PFs. Note, this is not sold in stores except by special order. So if you don't want to have to do a special order through your local stores, which of course I recommend as much as possible, support your local stores. Please do. And if you can order SFB or FNE stuff through your local game store, please do it. ADB would rather have you buy your games through those so you can support your local retailers. And of course, you might have to pay a little more, not sure. And if you do have to pay for a little more, please. It's a way of supporting a local economy, a local store. And in my mind, it's worth it. Of course, we're going to continue onward and forward. We come to SCP Online tournaments. We have the Sapphire Star 19 tournament. Round one is completed, and we're looking for round two to get those games started. It's excellent. It's always to see that things are going well when it comes to people going forward on that. When it comes to next F500 BBB tournament, that's actually started. Jeff is looking for signups for that, and actually that's going to be one of those things that will be on this week's episode of SFU On Call. So please listen to that. Quick news when it comes to online client stuff. There's what I have is just a minor update. I worked on the random number generator, i.e. the die rollers. Two of them, I switched the internal die roller to use the secure random generator, which in theory should give a better result when it comes to randomness. And also when it comes to the random.org die roller. It's the same die roller. I changed it a bit so that it no longer uses the obsolete API, so that people can actually, I'm gonna use the more modern API so that should continue to work. There should be no change in either one of those, but this will let you know that there has been some work done on the client. Moving on to the Starfleet Warlord. This week, game number G97, the Scanner Game 97, is over, and it has been won by Ken Cole. He is the victor of said game. It's a standard game, so you get to a certain point where you get either, it was nine, I think it's nine sectors, eight sectors, or a certain number of sites. He got the eight sectors. So we completed the game there. He won. And of course, I have to give him his prize money, which gets added to his account. Also, of course, Die Hard 58, still, there are five players that are gone. Pretty sure it's still just five players. And Die Hard number 59 is going well. We do have a dropout for that one. So there's one player that is gone on Die Hard 59 because of real life issues, basically. They had to drop out from the games that he's playing in. So we're going forward with Die Hard 59. When it comes to the library report for this week, no progress in SFB or FedCom. No big surprise there. I've had a very, very, very busy 2 weeks when it comes to, obviously last week I was out in the woods somewhere. And so I had a nice time chilling out there. And then, so that whole week, and also I went to the National Basilica on Tuesday. So basically the whole week was just nothing. I could get nothing else done. And then last weekend, again, crazy. This the beginning of this week, also crazy. I had so many different events that, it was nuts. Hopefully I should have some time this weekend, possibly. I got to check because I know my weekend schedule actually, again, is going to be very busy with other activities outside of SFB Online. So with that, that is the news for this week. And it's me, yes, the one and only Paul Franz, welcoming you to Star for the Universe On Call. And today, you got me and Doug's around here somewhere. I don't know where he is at the moment, but he is around here. I know that for a fact. Don't mind me if you're watching the video. I forgot to do something before I started, which was I forgot to change my status to podcast, so I don't have to worry about things like all kinds of blips and bleeps interfering with actual, okay, is there live? Okay, I'm all good. Just want to make sure, I don't want any blips and bleeps coming from my watch, coming from my phone, coming from my computer, all of those. So, but anyhow, tonight, we have a couple topics for tonight. Actually, the first one is, let's put it this way. It's an old topic from many, many years ago. And I do mean many years ago because we actually had the same discussion. I'm definitely somewhere in the past 5 to 10 years. That I know is truly the case. And it was probably even more 10 than 10 years ago, because for those of you who have not been with us when it comes to SFB Online for very long, or even the podcast. I'm not sure I've brought it up in the podcast. I think I probably did. And that is die rollers, the bane of the existence of any game. especially those who actually, they show you the values of the die rolls. Because you can have multiple games when it comes to, online games, to, the real-time games and so forth, that will actually use random number generators and actually do, quote-unquote, die rolls for the result of, like, when you hit something. Yes, you have, like, bonuses and so forth that you have more probable to maybe hitting something for, like, a plus five sword or a gun that was a plus 20, whatever, to hit at a certain range and so forth. But a lot of times we'll have a random number generator in there, so it's not guaranteed, because it's kind of trying to add some realism, whatever. But a lot of times those number generators, you don't see the results. A good example that's used for me is Starfleet Warlord. It has its own number generator. It does actually have a number generator. It's a random number generator. It's built into, Harbor. That's it. Harbor is the compiling and runtime for the Clipper that I use. It's open source and so forth. That has a whole random number generator and. Basically, this is always the funniest question I get when it comes to Starfleet Warlord. And that is, the people will say that those results are impossible. Then I go back, I look at the fight, and I go, no, they are possible. It's improbable, but it is possible. Where what happens usually is in those cases, the people who are arguing about it are saying, they've got like a 500-point fleet versus a 300-point fleet. And they say, the 300-point fleet basically defeated and destroyed my 500-point fleet. Well, that is possible. As I said, improbable? Yes. But depending upon what your roles were and what its roles were, which are never saved. See, that's the crazy thing. People say it's impossible. And yes, it is possible. But I have no record of exactly what the dice roll were, what exactly the damage was for that battle, for each round of that battle. I have no record of that battle to say, okay, here, this is what happened. This was the die rolls, and this is so forth. This. No, people can argue all they want with me to say that is impossible, and I have to keep telling them, yes, it is possible. It's just improbable, and can it possibly happen? Yes.
I may step in here, Paul.
By all means, Matthew.
Everybody has a story about getting to range 2 and unloading with all their photons and missing completely. And a lot of these stories are face-to-face with actual dice rather than a die roller. So, saying that things are improbable with a digital die roller, sure, but it doesn't really matter because it happens with the physical dice.
Oh yeah, totally.
Oh yeah. How many times have you seen it, both in electronic and in real life, where Hellbore, the 2d6 Hellbore, they get into that beautiful range where you have a 10, a roll, all you need is a 10. Which is very...
Yeah, the chances of missing with that is like 3 out of 36, 1 out of 12. So like an 8% chance of missing.
And then missing it. Double sixes.
Mm-hmm.
It's along those lines. It's like, no, it's possible. See, it is possible.
It happens.
Now,
I've got stories about getting to that and doing that with Hellbores and missing 3 out of 4. Wow. Which takes astronomical odds, but it happens.
Yeah. Just a quick curious question. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you now.
I can hear you.
Yay! I figured it out.
Yeah. Because you got on and I saw you. Yeah. I kept on saying, I'm not sure you heard it, which is Discord. Because the thing is with Discord, it lights your little thing lights up. It gets, you know, it gets a little outline whenever you're talking.
Oh, you saw that. You saw that. Yeah. And apparently, there's a new function now. You have to join chat or something.
Ah, so. Interesting.
Like over here, that's it weird. Says disconnect or join chat. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
Actually, I'm on mobile Discord, and I didn't have to do that, Doug.
Well, congratsy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I had to do it.
That's what
mine was special tonight. Extra special.
You're extra special tonight. Yeah.
You're always extra special, Doug.
Did you just bring up Discord tonight?
Did I do what?
Just bring up Discord tonight. Basically, just I've got an update for Discord tonight.
No, this is the one that I've used most of the time.
Okay.
On my old machine.
Yeah. Well.
Now what I did do was, I've had some issues with this box recently, and I would like to talk to you about it later,
right
after the show.
Mm-hmm.
But I literally switched the USB ports where I have the mic plugged in and right. Internet connection plugged in, and just switching the dongles, it made me reinstall the software for the mic, which was why you weren't seeing me talk in the very beginning.
Huh.
But then when you saw me talking, when you saw it doing the little green circle on my voice, I still had to go and hit a button on my version of Discord that says join chat or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So it was over in the big box of the program.
Okay. Yeah, because I haven't updated Discord for probably at least a couple weeks. So I did not.
I think it was a matter of Discord rediscovering the connection after Windows reinstalled it. So
yeah. Oh yeah, that's
because
one thing I always have to
switch ports.
Yeah, I have to worry about. With that, I'm pointing to the camera, which is basically OBS. OBS is very, very particular about what port that you have something connected into. It's very particular about that. Now, most software doesn't care. OBS does. But I'm assuming that it's the problem with how the ports are assigned and so forth, and how it recognizes the device. And instead of recognizing the device itself and its own little identifier, it actually is just using the port number. The USB port number is, and it says, oh, on that USB port, you've got this device. And that's OBS. Most software isn't like that on like Windows or Mac. It usually doesn't care, but OBS does. So, whatever. Hey, it works. The reason why this came up, when it comes to die rollers, was a big surprise. Somebody made a big stink about it. And as I pointed out, this is not new. This is not the first time. This is definitely the second time we've had a at-length discussion about die rollers in SFB Online. Which is why
it's even it's not so bad because random number generators in computing is so mature. We've been working on this for 50 years, 60 years that is really kind of a non-issue. You can get them off the shelf code and you know, you get virtually guaranteed randomness.
Well, still it's Pring, not train. But What that means is it's still pseudo random number generator, not a true random number generator. And as I exit part, I mentioned discussion about that, which is the big, of course, there's the whole issue with true number generators, which is how big of a set do you need to actually see that it's an even distribution? That's what it comes down to. You can have a very small distribution. You can, from the case of a game, you might get what? Maybe a maximum of 200 die rolls. You know, I mean, for yourself. Because that means that's over.
Yeah, more likely 20 or 30 rolls on any given battle.
Right, because don't forget that there's die rolls in the rolling for the DAC. Those are, that use the same die roller.
Oh yeah.
As the die rolls for the actual weapons, same die rolls. So, way back when, I think it's pretty close to 10 years ago, I added a feature to the SAP Online client called the Die Roll Monitor. So people can then, if they want to, they can look, watch their die rolls, and then they can screen, you know, like that to give them a good, you know, good number of rolls. And okay, this is what, here's the breakdown of those rolls. So it should give you a good idea. So, just to make one person happy and get them off my back. There's a new random number generator called qrandom.io, which is, give me a sec here. Qrandom.io. They say that it's a true random number generator utilizing quantum mechanics, exploring a fascinating world of quantum physics. Now the interesting part about this is that we have to trust that that actually is true. We have no way, to really verify outside of an outside person coming in physically to their facilities and actually checking their code and checking their actual physical machines, because since it's quantum mechanics, therefore, there actually has to be some kind of physical presence, physical random number generator for this. Now, the one thing it allows us to do is, it's a new kind of random number generator. What I gotta love, which was frustrating as hell for me, which is the person that says, "Oh, you gotta use an AI die roller." What does that mean? What does it mean to use? What is the difference? How would an AI improve the randomness of die rolls? Now, the one problem with die roller is because they have to have a certain set of die rolls. You know, you have to train an AI on how to roll a die. Because anyone who knows a little about AI, about LLMs. Let's go with LLMs. What they actually output is not intelligence, believe it or not. It's weird. It is guessing what the next phrase is going to be. It's incredible how it does it, because we don't understand how it does it. How it actually creates something that is actually cohesive and understandable. Except for that, it's guessing what the next word would be in a sentence and how that would actually come together. It does not understand the English language, but it gives us a guess on that. So in that case, when it comes to random number generations, It doesn't know how to create a random number. You have to train it with, here's the numbers. Now, and I'm not sure how it would do this, which is select me a number randomly out of that set. How large of a set do you need? And question, how would it select that randomness? How, what's its, how what does it do it? Because the thing is, LLMs suck at math, period. It doesn't understand the simplistic idea of like 2 + 2 = 4. It can, if you say, what is 2 + 2, it will give you 4. But it doesn't understand that 2 things + 2 things are 4 total objects. Doesn't know.
What's worse is that they're terrible at math because they don't understand that 2 + 2 = 4. Sometimes they'll give you 2 + 2 = 5. They're a large language model because they're trained for languages. They're not trained for math.
Yeah. Oh.
And people may say, hey, it's a computer. It's supposed to be good at math. The problem is that the code is not good at math. And that's why it sucked.
Exactly. And I laugh because this back in my college days, I think it was college days, which is that we had a saying, which is in some instances, 2 + 2 does = 5 and relatively large number values of 2. It's a comp sci thing.
I get it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, as I mentioned with the QRandom, it's a free API. I tested it and actually, yes, you can prove 2 + 2 = 4. Mathematically, there's the mathematical proof that you actually can prove that 2 + 2 = 4. Mm-hmm. QED. Thank you very much. Next. But the API is free at the moment anyway. And hopefully, I'll add that because it looks like it's relatively simple. You do a simple get for those of you. A get in the case of a browser is like you entering this little URL, string on the address bar and hit enter. That's a get. Other things like random.org. As I just mentioned in the news portion, that they switched from a get design, which is now an obsolete API, to a basically JSON API, which uses the method called post, which is a little more different, a little different. But both QRandom with the get and random.org with a post, both return the same thing. They return a JSON object. For those of you with comp sci, you know what I'm talking about what JSON is, which is formatting.
And for those of you who don't know what JSON is, it's just a protocol for dealing with transmission. It's code, basically.
Yeah, it is truly code because JSON is based off of what? JavaScript. I tested out. I got it to work. I should be able to get it working. For it, so hopefully there's no issue with that. I plan on adding that to it for nothing else, just to make that person happier. And as I said in the news portion, I updated the random number generator. They use internal for the internal roles from the random one, which is not really, it's not for, you can't use that for security purposes because the randomness is not good enough for security purposes. Switch to secure random, which is supposed to be better randomization. Whether it will, we'll have to wait and see. These days and days, I'm not sure because, especially depending upon, as was pointed out in the discussion post, which is the big issue with Java and the internal Java and JVM is the random number generator is basically based off the platform that's running on. If the operating system that it's running on, if the random number generator that it uses, it has available to it, is not that good, it's not going to be that good. Hopefully, secure random will be better. Yeah. Iggy. Hi, Iggy. In Twitch was mentioning, can we bring this up real quick? Which is. Okay, the person who was screaming about, she used an AI, random number generator. And he said, from the AI, services like random.org provide random numbers generated from atmospheric noise, i.e. a true source of random numbers. While these are not suitable for real-time low-latency applications like video games, dice rollers, which we are not. We don't need low latency. SAP Online is not low latency. That means being able to generate a lot of random numbers very quickly, they're excellent for secure high entropy, which is you want high entropy, number generation. And the person was complaining about random.org not having good random number generators. So I don't have to do anything. Because you already stated from the AI itself. The AI itself said random.org has excellent random numbers. To me, that was funny. That was the thing that just kicked. I couldn't help but laugh when the person said that. As I mentioned in the post, for those of you who have been not part of the discussion board, one thing I mentioned in the post, which is that with using the new API for random.org, there's one minor glitch. I don't think people will exceed this unless someone sits there and just keeps on hitting the freaking roll your boat gently down the screen, mail until you're blown up by somebody. And that is, and only it's a developer account, because you have to actually have to register an account with random.org to use the new API. That only allows you 30,000 die rolls, 30,000 net random numbers per month. Unless someone really decides to abuse the die roller within SAP Online, I don't see that people ever exceeding our whole community in 1 month, 30,000 die rolls. I don't see it. That also assumes that everybody switches to random.org from the internal die roll. Because by default, it uses the internal die roller. And unless you're not happy with the internal die roller, you probably won't touch that. You will not use an external die roller. Oh, and just a little step behind the curtain for those of you who are interested in the die roller. One thing I do with the external die rollers, I collect 100 die rolls at a time. So what happens is the online client goes, it calls the API for random.org, says, give me 100 die rolls. It then stores that and saves that. Save it locally. Now, it is not saved as part of the game, and I will not do that. Because Lord knows, I'm sure if I do that, I'm going to have complaints from users. And also, there's always there is that one, in my mind, major issue, which is if someone really wanted to, and I honestly, I don't think there's anyone in the SWP Online community that are this just insane. Let's put it that way. And that is somebody can go and actually modify the saved file of the same game file and actually modify the die rolls. If I did that, and I see no reason to do that. So I'd rather have it just, it's in memory, and after the client goes whoop, it then wipes it all away and it gets a whole new set of die rolls. Now, obviously, there is a minor issue. I see it. You can in theory can see it maybe for the internal die roller, where the seed, the beginning die rolls of when you bring up the client, could in theory have pretty low entropy overall, and you have to get down the line to actually increase the entropy. Obviously, if you are concerned about that, use random.org, because random.org, that should not be an issue overall. Yeah. Actually, Iggy was mentioning here, unless I'm playing for money, pseudorandom number is statistically equivalent to a true random. Even if you're playing for money, that also will probably be the case because of, I'm just thinking about esports and those games, which they do have random numbers generating in them, you know, and people do play it for money. So, he also said he's used random.org for Vassal, and it's hard to exceed the limit. Yeah. Agreed. Now, you know, do I still have it? No, okay. Let me bring it up. Do I have it? Let's do a quick login. Still login. Now, pause. Where is it? Learn more. Pricing, there it is. Learn more pricing. Yeah, I'm a human. Leave me alone. Now, for developer, Zillow's month, approximately 30,000 requests per month, including 1,000 quests per day. Now, for commercial, non-gaming, which will cost me $12 a month, I get 60,000 requests. And
oh boy.
And then, of course, and then here comes the fun part. Additional 0.0000, so three zeros, per additional request. So after you exceed $60,000, now you're paying additionally for each request afterwards.
Yeah, about 2 cents per 1,000 requests.
It's around. Actually,
aren't there just like apps out there you could use that don't cost that or anything nearly remotely that?
Well, the problem is not apps, it's not the thing. You have to have a service so it can be integrated into the actual SWP Online without any possibility of a user interfering. Modifying the die rolls. So, and maximum, hold this.
Okay.
Now, the reminder, this is a maximum of 10 requests per second at peak rate.
So, I know this may sound like utter heresy, but
by means,
can you just write your own little app and have that on your server and just access it separately of the client?
Yeah, that's what the alternate, that's some of the alternate die rolls are. They're on my actual.
Right. Well, that's what But without, yeah, I mean, if you write your own, though, you put your own there, then you're not having somebody's, quote, fancy AI service doing it for you and charging your guys $12 a month or whatever.
That's true, but that's not a actual truly random number. That's a pseudo-random number,
right,
which is perfectly fine, as Iggy pointed out, perfectly fine for what we're doing here.
Right.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and it sounds to me like the person complaining is like, well, you know, AI, it's AI is the new hotness right now.
It is, and, yeah.
Yeah, and that's basically it, Paul.
Yeah, don't get me started on that, because that's the big push for my day job is more AI, which I...
Honestly, just remember, garbage in, garbage out. All they're doing is amplifying it.
Don't get me started with AI and slop. Because the wonderfulness...
Okay, I won't get you started on it. Let it go.
...of AI-generated code. And the biggest issue, because actually a developer at my company did this, and he didn't actually check this to make sure that the generated code was correct. And then going, that's bad. He said, here's a paper on the algorithm. Write code based on that. And I went, unless you understand what that paper did, how do you know that the algorithm that they gave was correct? Because you can't believe AI at the moment. It's not 100% solid. And Lord knows, I've been hearing about the issue with slop as it stands, where people put out the slop, you know, the stuff that's generated by AI, which is not correct. And then later on, they have to fix it, which anyone who does any development knows the number one rule, which is takes, depending upon where in the process you catch the bug. If you catch it early in the process, when you're first developing that feature, it's cost you very little. Get to QA, the cost double. You get it out the door to a customer, costs triple. Because the biggest issue is taking what you got and then debugging it. That's a lot more difficult.
So we were talking about SFB stuff, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, to divert you from the AI slop discussion.
Sorry.
Can I divert this to the 500 point BPV tournament,
which is the next topic?
Yay!
Awesome.
So
hey, I've joined that one, and so I've been in contact with Jeff Clark, codename Spartan, who's administrating that one. And he says that come Monday, he's going to be announcing players and teams and races, or empires, rather.
Okay.
I joined that one. I was going to play a Hydran fighter fleet, but I decided that it's good for the first shot, and then after that, it has a lot of problems. I had moved away from that.
Mm-hmm.
But if you'd like, I can discuss what I was thinking of with the fighter fleet.
Sure.
So what I had picked was a heavy lancer, which is a the Hydran D, or a heavy war destroyer version. But it came out before the heavy war destroyers came out. It came out in Y-172. But it's got all the same things. It's it carries 6 fighters on its own, and can carry up to 10 more fighters for a total of 16 in a carrier conversion or a carrier variant.
Mm-hmm.
And then you add in a escort destroyer, an escort lancer, which carries 6 fighters of its own. And you're carrying around, you've got a carrier fleet with 22 Stingers on it. And it comes in at about 450 BPV doing that with warp booster packs. So my idea was to go ahead and take that fleet, which I didn't, but that was my idea, was take that fleet and launch the Stingers and have the Stingers go into about range 10 to the opposition And a normal Stinger 2 at range 10 in a neutral EW environment can do, on average, 5 points of damage each. That's 4 points from both fusions, and then about one more point from the Gatling gun. So 22 Stingers at range 10 is going to probably mission kill any kind of war cruiser. It probably won't do that much to a full-on cruiser because they tend to be a little tougher. And a battle cruiser probably would be damaged, but probably wouldn't be crippled. But the idea was to take this shot, range 10 shot, at about range 10, or I'm sorry, at unit that's about the middle of the field for their fleet, which ideally would be a war cruiser, because they're probably packing like a destroyer scout or something. And then have the fighters head and run away until their Gatlings can reload. And then come back at the opposition. No fusions because they're empty. But then with the Gatlings, try to press to about range 2. Where I figured that would be 88 phaser 3s at range 2. It'd be about 120 to 150 points of damage in a neutral EW environment. And that would be enough to, once again, probably kill a heavy cruiser or cripple a BCH. If I thought they could get to range 1, I was going to do that, and that would outright kill a BCH. That would do about 180 points of damage. And then the Stingers would probably be pretty much dead by that point, but the opposing fleet will probably be down to their small units and maybe some crippled larger units, which would then be up to the escort lancer and the heavy lancer to try to clean up on their own.
Hmm. That sounds interesting.
I'm interested to see on Monday what the other fleets are. Yeah. And then maybe get into what their likely tactics are going to be.
Mm-hmm. Is a team required?
No, but they're Frank and Majid have decided to team up and go together. The idea there is that if one of them can't do it because of real life or time zones or something, because Majid is over in the UK.
Yes, I know.
Then
he has a nasty habit of playing at like 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock in the morning, UK time. He's done.
Oh,
that.
Wow!
I've seen him do this. I know Majid. Actually, to be honest, I've known, at least I don't know him personally. I know Majid from playing Starfleet battles using play by email. Way back in the day, I knew Majid Farsi. You know,
did I have a tournament fight with him ages ago?
That's possible.
That's a long time
ago. Oh, it was a long time ago.
But Francois and Majid decided that they would team up together so they could be more available. But I believe everybody else has decided to go at it alone.
Okay. Well, I'm glad.
I saw something in Francois's or Frank's email that suggested he might have gone with Gorn.
Hmm.
I don't know for sure, though.
Should be interesting.
It would be.
Yeah. I was looking over the rules because I don't, when I'm off of work, I don't have the same stance when it comes to email. Because and on work, I am vicious about deleting emails. I'm vicious. If I'm not in there, I just delete. And you know, just make sure it's not related to me. If it's not related to me, I can just delete it. Well, I don't do the same thing with my personal accounts. And then I get swamped with these email exchanges which are not involving me, and they just add up, and I never read them. So, but anyway, That's why currently I've got like the whole this whole thread about the tournament, which is like 20 emails deep, which I haven't read a single one of them because I got the one and then all of a sudden got all this conversation between everybody else, and I never read them because there's too much conversation.
Yep.
Wow.
But Jeff, for this one, actually, Jeff is still taking signups. Yeah. He's loosened up the rules quite a bit from the first round. In the first round, you were required to take a size class 4 ship, right. And he's lifted that now. So you could take all cruisers or something if you wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
He's kept in the restriction of no dreadnoughts, but so that means the biggest you can do is a BCH. But he's allowed PFs, but you can't take a PF scout and a PFT with sensor channels. So if you want a PF scout or basically a full flotilla, then you're going to have to take something that doesn't have scout channels, like a Liren BC, I believe, is a true PFT that doesn't have scout channels. And I did not see the Liren, like, what is it, a DD, a light PFT, carries half a flotilla. I didn't see an SSD for those, so I don't know if that's available.
Okay, hold on. Okay. You might have that incorrect. I'm reading the rule, and it says, one PF tender is permitted for the Lirans only, who may take up to one PF flotilla, leader, scout, and 4 combat variants, or up to 6 casual PFs, noted a PF tender with special sensors, plus a scout PF is not permitted. Now, given that he's saying that, to me, though, that means is that you can take a PF tender with special sensors, but you'd have to have 6 casual PFs, i.e. no leader, no scout.
That's the way I read it, too.
Okay. So you just can't have a normal PF flotilla that has the leader and the scout and have the PF tender with special sensors.
Yes. And by my calculation, there's only one Liren unit that is a true PFT and also does not have special sensors. And it's the BC or the BCH.
Mm-hmm. Well, but from the sound of it, you can actually take a PF tender with special sensors. It's just that the PF flotilla is going to be a casual flotilla.
Right.
No leader, right. No scout.
Now, ordinarily, that wouldn't be much of a problem. You could gripe about the EW environment, but the PFT, I believe, can lend to the flotilla just fine. But the thing that I would gripe about if I were the Lirans is that means that there's no wild scouts, no wild scout PFT or scout PFs,
right.
Which is something to gripe about because a wild PF scout and wild swacks are the only two units that can go wild, and all seeking weapons that are targeted on them. Well, there's a little bit of a difference. Wild swacks, every seeking weapon within a certain radius is targeted on the swack.
Right.
With wild scout PFs, any seeking weapon targeted on their flotilla and or on their PFT are now seeking the scout. So if you can't do a scout PFT, if you can't do a full flotilla of PFs, that means no scout PF. That means no wild scouts.
Right.
So, which can be important when you're dealing with Speed 32 drones or Sabo Plasma.
True.
Because a wild scout can still go maximum speed. It doesn't cost any power to do, and there's no requirement that you go slow and look like a hole in space. So you could actually rev up to maximum speed, speed 31 or whatever, and run away from all these super fast seeking weapons while saying, everybody come after me, everybody come after me.
Yep. Okay, that's a reminder of this tournament is a little different from the previous 500 BPV tournament. As mentioned in the document here, it says concept is matches will be conducted in two phases. First one will be a flexible round robin-like phase, which players are randomly matched to each other, complete their battle, and then they are matched with another player in the next round. Each player should have at least two opportunities to fight a match, and completing both matches, completing at least four turns in each, and thus qualifies for the final playoff round, in which the top two players by score will be matched and see section when it comes to the victory. So that's an important distinction when it comes to for selection. When it comes to the amount of BPV, it's still 500 BPV. Has not been increased now, except for the select the community option at the normal 20% rate. So it's adjusted total must not exceed 600 BPV. So without commander's options, it has to be 500. And then after commander's options, it can be over 500 all the way up to 600 BPV. Now, obviously,
the important thing to note is that warp booster packs and drone speed upgrades come out of the 500 points. They don't come out of the commander's options.
Huh. Did not know that.
Because both of those warp booster packs, the first warp booster pack for a shuttle or for a fighter, and also any drone speed upgrades are part of your force selection, force BPV.
Right. Oh yeah.
And they're not part of your commander's options. If you're for drones, your commander's options cover things like slug drones and spearfish drones. It's your warhead and your frame and everything, but it's not your engines, not the speed upgrades.
Okay, he did not make that clear.
It's rules as written. I just don't have the rule references in front of me. For okay. both of those, it's rules as written.
Okay, because in the force selection, it says that the total of ships plus refits and drone speeds should not exceed 500 BPV. That doesn't mention warp booster packs.
Yeah. But
I'm assuming
that's warp booster packs are mentioned as such in their own section. Not in the tournament rules, but in the Starfleet Battles rules.
Right. That's I figured that's what you were talking about. So, yeah. You can have, so the limited availability, like, so there's smaller status field generators, status field ships, or ships with shock is permitted. So you can have one limited crazy ship. Okay, tugs, battle tugs only. Drone ships, foul ships, ships, that is regular.
Yeah. I think it would have been fascinating to see a Klingon force built around a stasis field generator.
Agreed.
I think that would be fascinating to do.
Oh, I agree. That'd be fascinating to do. Would it be
practical?
Smart? Because the biggest problem, in my mind, the biggest problem with the CFG ships is that they are expensive as all get out for what you give up.
Yeah.
Because what's like the smallest one? I think it's like a D7 A?
Well, I know there's a D6 A. There may be there's a D5 A, a war cruiser. There may be a war destroyer variant.
With a stasis field generator?
Guess what ship would be? Targeted. Guess what ship gets targeted for destruction at long range?
Oh, I'm sure that's going to be the big pack target on its back. I agree there.
And once well, it's,
so,
once
so it's a Mahler. Crippled,
oh yeah. So once yeah. it's crippled, it's done.
Yeah, Mahlers would be the same way.
Yeah, agreed.
Agreed. Now
you get the single overpowered thing. It's gonna die. It'll be
yeah. You probably want that on a larger unit anyway, like maybe a C7 or something.
Right.
Yeah, go for a C7A.
Oh, definitely C7A. Oh man. Who was complaining about the C7A and how it's nuts when it comes to EDR? Because I'm willing to bet anyone who's going to Klingon Force is going to have a C7 in their force.
Probably. Yeah, just go for a battle cruiser.
Yeah, I'm hoping that we have a better variety of empires this time. It wasn't too bad. We had like Klingon, Fed, Gorn, Romulan, Saltorian.
We had like two Feds and two Klingons or something.
Mm-hmm. And of course, here's my ultimate question. Here's one of those questions that I'm really fascinated about, which is, given the experience that people had with the previous tournament, and given that we're keeping EW as part of tournament of the fleet play, how many will try to play without a scout? Will there be anybody who actually goes scoutless?
I can go on the record and say that I did not purchase a scout for my fleet.
Have you purchased your fleet yet?
I have. And you, I submitted it yesterday.
Right. That's what that's the important thing, is did he submit it?
Yeah. And actually, that Hydran fighter fleet would not have needed a scout. It the core of it was all those fighters, and you can't use a scout to lend to fighters. You can't even lend to a squadron as a whole unless you are the home carrier for that squadron.
Right.
So a scout would have been useless in that fighter fleet, except as self-protection, perhaps.
Mm-hmm. Jeez. Obviously, the one thing that interests me is, of course, this little baby. Actually, that was shocking, to be honest, which is that from the survey, Andromedas are the one thing people felt like should be added to the tournament.
Well, to be honest, I tried to get everything added. I wanted to see Frax in there. I wanted to see Paravians and Carnivans and Andromedans and Jindarians. I wanted to see everything in there.
Hey, the Vudar's here.
You can play. Yeah.
That would be an interesting fleet.
I passed up playing Vudar because I saw that they had a very limited set of ships they could fly.
Right. That is a problem. But I have a little bit of time. Maybe tomorrow? Like, I might have some time tomorrow. I'm gonna see if I can come up with an Andromedan fleet. I'm not gonna pre-announce it. I'm gonna wait. There's two ways of going with the Andromedans, because it's probably BBV is very small.
For Andromedans, it is.
Yeah, because you can either go with the whole mothership route, and the mothership being like I was gonna say Infestor, but not Infestor, an Intruder with like Cobras, or you can go with a dispersed fleet of more of the the large satellite ships, you know, the Mambas, Mamba class, or the, yeah, the
Python and Mamba.
Mamba, yeah. The Python. I thought there was the eel, the Python, and the is it eel?
Eel is based off the Viper. No, I'm sorry. It's based off a Cobra.
Right.
What was it? I don't remember the name.
It's been so long. Because I remember the eel has actually, I thought it was the eel that had the four special sensors, and it was the 1.5 satellite ship. Versus the Courier. The Courier is the Cobra based scout.
The eel is based off the Cobra. It does have four special sensors.
Okay.
But in my experience, it is underpowered.
Oh yeah.
I think you'd be better off with an Anaconda.
Oh, Anaconda, yeah. That was the one I was thinking of. And possibly an Anaconda and as a fleet. Have like possibly, and because one thing that bothers me greatly, the Andromeda can only have one ship with a displacement device. Womp, womp, womp.
That would be your Anaconda in that fleet.
You're allowed up to two. In a normal Andromeda engagement, you're allowed up to two. Three, and they get sucked in.
Yeah, so you'd probably be best off going for a mothership because they tend to pack two or more displacement devices.
Right. Exactly.
Problem is that an intruder class mothership is going to be just over half of your BPV.
Oh, I know. It's like 250 BPV right there.
Like 280.
Oh, 280.
265 for a regular intruder. So you'd probably have to go for a conquistador and an intruder, and you'll have like 50 points left over. So you could probably get like a Viper or maybe a Courier.
Wow. Yeah.
So
obviously I got something to think about. When it comes to mind,
personally, I think you should go for the mothership route because of the extra displacement devices, and I think that's really what makes the Andromedans dangerous.
Yeah, but here's always the biggest issue with the mothership route, and I know this from personal experience. Assuming that if you start the engagement flying fast, and I do mean this, instead of I according to the tactics manual, I've read this and I tried the tactic and I went, it doesn't work. The pop 'em strategy or tactic, which is the mothership has all their little babies inside it. You fly towards the other fleet and you go pop, and your satellite ships all of a sudden appear out of nowhere. Problem. That is hell of expensive energy wise. It is just so freaking expensive to do. I've done it and it's expensive. Their mothership slows down so much. It no longer has that speed possibility. You're going like speed 15 while your satellite ships are going speed 10. So that's not exactly, in my mind, the best thing in the world, especially when you have fast drones and plasma flying at you. Now,
that's a good point. That's going to be your downfall, I think. If you go the mothership route, you're not going to have enough phasers to take care of all the drones.
Understood. That's why you have that's T-bombs. Always the fun part, which is T-bombs, PA mines,
and running away,
and speed,
and running away.
Yeah, I'm used to it. Believe it or not, yeah. I'm actually used to it. I'm used to having to deal with not enough phasers for a lot of drones. I'm used to dealing with that. I actually am, believe it or not. Because if you've ever, and I'm not sure you have, ever played in the tournament, Model T tournament, the Zinni versus the Andromeda. The Zinni can dish out a lot of drones, to the point where the Andromeda cannot deal with the amount of drones that it can dish out. And then I'm talking about the fast drones. They can set it up so that you can completely overwhelm the Andromeda for that. Now, that usually meant that you had to take at least one or two of the drones on your panels. That was the only way to do it. And of course, anyone who's played Andromeda know this for a fact, which is invariably you have to have things hit you. You have to take damage. Because if you don't take damage, you don't take energy. If you don't take energy, you run, you go, pew, and slowly do nothing.
That's true. The tournament crate these days is very much power starved.
Yes, it is.
So yeah, looking at your motherships, I think an intruder or an imposer and then a conquistador is really a great route because you get the durability of the mothership, you get the extra displacement devices, and you have to come up with some kind of small scout you can carry along though.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think you can probably go toe-to-toe. I mean, like range 3. And still come away with the other guy worse for wear.
Oh yeah, and the beauty about the Andromeda, and it depends upon how their fleet set up. The tough part is going to be the freaking secret weapons. That's always the toughest part for the Andromedans. And that's what, and see, that's why people are complaining about, I don't want Andromedans in this tournament. And I'm going, why are you worried?
But you can eat them.
Yeah.
If you have enough drones.
Because when it comes to the drones in the, in. Amen. When it comes to drones in fleet combat, it's got a tougher time than it does in single ship combat. So, you know. The people who complain about it, it's like, you don't know anything.
Oh, there's people that will complain about it that will complain about anything. So
I know a lot of people complain about it because they don't like the Andromedans because they're different weapon system. Different ways of tactics that are used against it. And it's like, bite me.
Yeah.
Well, it's basically it's real alien tech to the game.
Right.
Compared to the rest of this. The rest, literally all the other races in the game.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always been that way. It's going to be that way. Yeah, that's basically it. I mean, it's an odd duck, to put it mildly.
Yeah. Quack, quack.
And it's an odd duck that most people aren't used to having to deal with.
Wait a minute, what the heck? Are you kidding me?
What?
The Federation may take up to 4 casual PFs. However, no Federation force can combine PFs and phaser Gs, units, fighters, carriers, escorts. If there are any additional non-size class to regular for your race, that the year in service is less than Y-185 in the general war, for example, HDW, this may be selected.
Well, that's because he's allowing casual PFs. You could take PFs on mech links.
Yeah, but that's saying that
he's limiting them to 4.
But implicitly, he's basically allow the Federation to take the PFs.
Yes, well, but he's saying you take the PFs, but you can't have any fighters that have Gatlings.
Right.
Can't take anything with Gatlings.
So that should be that makes it interesting because I know Eddie Crutchfield, he was pushing for that. And then I'm going, I don't like those stupid things. I really don't.
Well, you know, I was pushing for increasing the fighter limit on Hydrans.
Mm-hmm.
I was pushing for 24 fighters. And then I turn around and I turn out not to take that fleet, but. Hey, here's a joke fleet for you, Paul. You should take a mobile operations sled. Size 4 is based on a Viper and it carries MWPs.
Oh crap, monitors. I forgot about those things. Oh geez, an MWPs. Oh.
Monitors.
Oh.
Take monitors.
I have to reread about the MWPs. Cause it's been a while.
Yeah, because you can take those.
I know I can
you
take
can
them.
You can actually legit take those.
That'd be a crazy idea. Drawing with the MWPs?
Yeah. That'd give you the phasers to take care of drones and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
They pop like popcorn, though.
Oh, that's
only take 20% damage.
That is a problem. Hey, the one thing I can do, I could take an energy module.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, but that comes out of your force. Of course, BPB. It's not a commander's option. So
I know. And obviously, that's something you have to do. You only can do with a mothership. And yes. Then remember, the Conquistador is a mothership.
Uh-huh.
A Conquistador can carry a Cobra-sized satellite ship.
Well, you can take other small support units, like a displacement beacon. You remember what those are?
No.
A displacement beacon. It's a small support unit, so it's smaller than a Viper.
Right.
And it's kind of like a mine. You'd place it, and then if you displace something to it, then you get a bonus on the displacement roll.
Oh.
If I recall correctly. I haven't read it in like a year or two, but... It gives you a bonus to displacing to that location, whether it's your ship or you're displacing somebody else there.
Interesting.
Definitely interesting.
When did they add that?
Module J2.
Okay. Huh.
They added several small support units, which, the pseudo satellite ship, I think, is considered a small support unit.
Yeah, the PSS, yeah.
Yes.
Big whopping 25. NWP is around 20. I have to look at that. I have to look at that just for giggles. Oh, the Courier.
There you go.
The Courier actually is a Viper-based satellite ship. Okay.
Yeah, and it's going to be very power-starved.
Yeah, I know.
You're not really going to be doing much for EW there. It's good for drones, though.
Yeah, because that is the fun part for me, which is that I mentioned this thing long ago and many times before, which is. I did play an Andromedan fleet once. And part of the Andromedan fleet, I think, was an eel. And what I did with the satellite ship, that eel was my scout. And I had my, I think it was Intruder. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was Intruder cruiser. And what I did was I took that, which is 260, Intruder's 265, by the way. Yes. And I tractored the eel, and I dragged the eel along, so it did not have to charge anything for movement. It could, you did not use a single point of power for movement. It could use all its power for EW.
And the intruder actually has a standard tractor beam. It doesn't have to give up a TRH for it.
Exactly. And that's why I did that.
That's good.
To me, it's a great use of it, of the tractor beam.
It's like having a sensor drogue.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a drogue.
Yep. I'm wondering if I could do the same thing with the courier. The courier, I forget. I actually, that's one thing. I have to look at the courier, to be honest, because of the original courier way back in the day was an amalgamation of a Cobra. It was an amalgamation. It had like one scout, had like two phaser ones, and had a TR beam. It was
The Courier these days, based off the Viper, has three sensor channels and two phaser twos, the four PAs in front, three in back, right, and four batteries.
Exactly. Was it?
And 13 static power. So it's just enough to go speed 30 and power up housekeeping. But if you powered up any of your sensor channels, you're down to like speed 27, 24, 21. And then you got batteries for your EW.
Hmm. Wonder what would happen if I actually decide to fly like a Terminator.
That's year 184, 82.
Yeah, it's 84.
I don't think you...
Yeah, not allowed.
Yeah, I don't think you're allowed to do that.
Uh-huh.
I think you ought to do it though. Go for an ASP. That's the Viper version. You know, that way it's kind of not great powered, and so they might let you scoot in under the wire.
There's the CCR. Oh, that's those bastard ones. I think the CCR is basically that's it's a Cobra monitor with a displacement device.
Oh, yeah, the reconnaissance Cobra.
Yep. Which is an interesting beast.
You can't take your Mamba Python thing, though, if you take that.
Right, I know. But the thing is, if I took that, I wouldn't take a Python. I'd take Mambas. Just two Mambas.
There you go.
So
you got to do that.
Yeah.
Well, no, I think you ought to take the motherships myself, but if it were me, I'd take motherships.
Mm-hmm. Understood. Well, anyway, I will figure that out this weekend so I can submit it to Jeff before he announces everything and make sure he knows that I'm interested in the tournament. So I think with that, we will wrap it up for this evening.
Mm.
Unfortunately, the Mariners are losing.
Yes, they are.
6-2.
It's not over yet.
Not over yet. But if they lose, then it's going to be
a pretty good indicator, but it's not over yet.
It's going to be 2-2. And the thing is, that means Seattle has to win. They don't lose. If they lose today, they have to win tomorrow. If they don't win tomorrow, they're dead. They're dead. I apologize for that. I had a really bad itch in my foot. But anyway.
Oh, dookie.
We'll wrap it up there because also I need sleep. Oh, the shocker. Hey,
before you go to sleep.
Yes.
Give some thought to what you're going to run at Gamers of Winter. I updated the thing and added the event today.
Cool. I will probably.
Is that in February?
That's in
February. February 14th.
President's Day weekend.
February 14th, 15th, 14th. And
16th.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
And
I very nearly went to Gamers of Summer because that was over my birthday weekend and the wife might have let me go. So I'm gonna see what I can do about February.
Okay.
Yeah, that,
yay.
That dude, I would love to have you. I would love to have you. And as I mentioned before. and I'll mention it now, which is I plan on doing a repeat of what I did last Gamers of Summer, which I did 2 days of streaming live from Gamers of Summer. Mm-hmm. I did two different demos. Obviously, if I have someone to play and actually play a regular game, I'll be happy to stream that. And if you were up for playing either maybe a Federation Commander game or SFB game, that'd be great, and we could stream it live and let people laugh at us at how badly we're doing.
That's right. Point and laugh.
So,
all right, Paul, Doug, it's been great.
Yep.
I'm going to let you guys go.
Thank you. Have a good one.
Yeah.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you, Paul.
Thank you. Okay, you have a good night. Doug, always a pleasure to have you around.
Yep, thanks for having me on.
I'm glad you were able to work out your technical difficulties.
Give me about 5 minutes when we're done.
Understood. Okay. Well, you have a good night. Okay. So, we're all good with all good in the world. Obviously, nice discussion about die rollers and AI. Let's not bring up that topic again. There could be worse topics. We could talk about politics. That would be worse. I do not plan on bringing it up. Okay. Short of the government forcing me somehow to shut down S&P Online or something like that, or cancel the podcast for some reason. I don't see that happening. That's the only time I'd ever bring it up. Just to let you know. Now, of course, then we had a nice discussion about the 500 BBB tournament. It should be interesting to see how it goes this time. I'm going to participate in that. I plan on taking the Andromedans. I will see what I can make up with kind of wonderful fleet. Obviously, my biggest concern is going to be everything is fast. And when everything gets fast, the Andromedans have problems. And that's the reason why it's like, why are you afraid of the Andromedans? We get faster and fast plasma. So we'll just have to wait and see. If I play an Andromeda, I am not going to be as foolish as I did with the Saltorians, and I'm not going to go without a scout, because I learned my lesson. I think we in a scout environment, you need a scout, because of if you don't, then you get screwed. So with that, I'm Paul Franz. I bid you a good night.